ציון צופיע.
Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are. And shalom, and welcome to Talpiot, Jerusalem, a beautiful neighborhood here. And you'd think that we'd be with Rabbi Mike Foyer today, but we're not. Rabbi Mike is off today, and instead I have my very good friend Alex Trayman, who is the Jerusalem Bureau Chief of JNS, JNS.org, which is Jewish News Syndicate, an incredible website publishing cutting-edge stuff about what's going on in the land of Israel. Really, one of the when people ask me, Alex, where to go today to find out what's going on in Israel, I tell them JNS.org. I have a few others, but you're definitely at the top, and it's an up-and-coming paper coming out of, like, it's been around for a long time, but now it's really taking stride, and a lot of great organizations are also publishing their material there. Alex Trayman, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Yishai.
It's good to have you on today. It's good to be in your office here at JNS. And tonight, Alex, last night was a humongous day in Jewish history, and I'm still reeling from it. And that is this deal of the century was announced. We've heard about this deal of the century for like 2 years now. The deal of the century, deal of the century. And finally, it came to fruition last night, and it was on live TV. It was also on live Twitter. It was live everywhere. You sent me a YouTube link. I was watching it just on Israeli TV. They were doing something that they never do. They were not translating throughout. They just let it go. And it was a room in Washington, D.C. Was it at the White House itself or not?
It was in the White House.
It was in the White House. And so he had this room. I was looking at the room. I could not believe how many people I knew, how many people were friends. Jeff Balaban was there. Representative Clemens from the Carolinas, who is a great friend, other people that are very close to, even listeners of the show, were there in that room, not to mention fun folks. Like, who was fun? Wasn't it fun to see Dershowitz there?
I think the most interesting were the people that made the plan and were sitting in the front row, you know, and you're talking about Ambassador to Israel David Friedman, Jason Greenblatt, who was previously the special envoy, Jared Kushner, Avi Berkowitz, and on the Israeli side, Ron Dermer. You know, this is the team that put together the this peace proposal, and the people who are in the room are the people that they know well.
And there was a few others that put together this proposal. I know that Kohelet had something to do with it. Like, this has been worked on for a long time. My next-door neighbor is really the director of this policy forum called Kohelet. Very powerful, very powerful. And we were watching this room, and there came the prime minister. And the prime minister of Israel, he's just so happy right now. He's got this face on, like, giddy almost, that he's able to achieve these things. And basically, it was a two-part event, where first it was the president of the United States speaking. And he was speaking, on the one hand, you know, off the teleprompter, but a little bit extemporaneously, made some, like, of his kind of Trumpian comments to some people who are like, don't become a senator, stay with me, and stuff like that. Or what he said, like, you know, he said about Jerusalem, he's like, the recognition of Jerusalem, he was tooting his own horn, but he's like, I did that for you. And he was being himself. But really, that part of the speech was a little bit less fun for nationalists like myself, because you heard a lot about a Palestinian state, and it sounded like, well, what are we exactly going for? But then the Prime Minister of Israel came on after him, Netanyahu, and he kind of explained what this is really all about, which was really that for a Palestinian state to happen, they would really have to become pretty de-Palestinianized. What I mean by that is, put down your arms, collect the arms, have a non-armed state, then also stop the payment to terrorists, and also stop the propaganda to the youth, the incitement, and basically, like, stop doing the thing that you're doing in order to become a Palestinian state. But Israel, you can have what you've already achieved right now, which is you can annex the places you should annex, can annex, or you're recognized as having the rights to annex. You can annex those places right now. Go ahead, do it. It's yours. All the stuff of the settlements and all the things that were called settlements for so long, this is now going to become regular Israel. Okay? And that was a paradigm shift. Now, you said to me before the show, and I felt this way also, it took time to, like, analyze it, to process what was being said there. I know that some of my friends were like, oh no, this is just a call for a Palestinian state. This is bad for the Jews. But my other friends, I think, who more properly analyzed it and took a little bit more time, were like, No, what this is really about is about Judea becoming Jewish now, and a Palestinian state would have to very much change its colors altogether in order to become this thing, or instead it'll never become this thing, and this thing is their role is not going to happen. They're not going to take it, and but Israel is a Israel and Judea is here. It's here to it's a reality that's on the ground right now. That recognition. Take into account what the presidents that we've had in the past. This was a total paradigm shift. Instead of Israel having to stop and freeze and not do this and not do that, suddenly it's like all that you've done to settle in Judea and Samaria has all been right all along. And to me, that was yesterday. I thought to myself, wow, that was a great approbation of our effort to hold on to this land. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I think that the framework of the plan is to take the situation on the ground where Palestinians live in areas in which they do and say, okay, you want to be called a state? Well, if you'll start acting like a state, and what we mean is no financial corruption in government, no incitement to violence, definitely no pay for slay, terror financing, complete demilitarization, that if you behave in these ways in which we want you to behave in any kind of arrangement, we'll let you call your area state, and in return, we're going to get $50 billion in international financing for infrastructure, like much, much better road infrastructure than the Palestinians have right now, and also tons of commercial opportunities, including factories, industrial centers, everything, and also they'll get a little bit more territory, you know, in the West Bank, in Judea and Samaria, and also some new centers in and around Gaza along the southern Israeli border with Egypt. So it's basically saying, get what you have now, plus a little room to expand. We're going to invest a lot of money. In return, you behave like we want you to behave. And that's the plan, right?
So that's the plan on the Arab side of things. Not on the Jewish side of things, because the Jewish side of things is a very different aspect.
Because on the Jewish side, what the plan does is just really recognize what Israel already has. And that's following this pattern of recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, saying that it must remain undivided, recognizing sovereignty in the Golan Heights. The plan basically says...
And now recognizing...
Right, which they already said a few weeks back, that Judea and Samaria, it's not inherently illegal for Jews to settle in Judea and Samaria.
Right. So, right. That was preparing the ground. You're saying it's not absolutely illegal. Today, what he said was, not only is it not illegal, this is Israel. This is as legal as it gets. This is. I'm giving you a green light. It's important to always talk about that the President of the United States doesn't give us a green light. He gives us his approbation, his recognition of that, which is important because this is the greatest power in the world today. That doesn't mean that we are not an independent country to do what we think is right. We could do that. But anyway, besides that, the point is that he was saying, I recognize Golan, I recognize Jerusalem. I said that it's not inherently illegal, but then went much further yesterday by saying, you can live here.
Right. And I think that also what has to be taken into account with this plan, even before you judge what's on the pages or what exactly the map looks like, is that the entire mechanism of the negotiation is totally different than Oslo Accords or any of the subsequent accords like Camp David, in that it isn't like we're starting with a summit and at the end of like a few days, a few weeks, like we reach an answer, yes or no, or this or that. Basically says, you can say no to the plan today. Like, I expect you to say no today, but you didn't read it yet. And I'm assuming that after you finish protesting for a couple of weeks, somebody on your side is going to read the damn thing. And at that point, you might start to consider it. And basically, you have 4 years open period to start to at least acknowledge that you're going to go into this deal. Right. So that's totally different. But the other thing, which I think is really important, is that President Trump said, this could be your last opportunity to have a state, okay? Now, Israel's going to freeze some building in areas that are apportioned for the potential future Palestinian state for 4 years, okay? Now, look at the timing Okay, everybody says, why did the administration release the plan now? It's only 6 weeks, 5 weeks before Israeli elections. Because you're also 6 months away from the re-election of Trump in a first term. Okay, now, 4 years from now, Trump might be in the last year of a second term. And if after 4 years, the Palestinians have not taken any steps towards reaching the vision presented in this plan, that Trump is going to flip the door shut on this plan so hard, and that just might mean full Israeli sovereignty over everything, and who knows what else at that time.
Another humongous aspect of this diplomatic mega event that happened yesterday, which is this was really unprecedented, maybe more unprecedented than all the rest, was the agreement of Arab states to go along with this. We're talking about the UAE, we're talking about Saudi Arabia, we're talking about Egypt, we're talking about Bahrain, and I think Oman, and we're talking about like really Arab states being like, no, we like this plan. Now, somebody and one of my friends and listeners, Arthur, wrote to me in a tweet, and he said Trump had to, this whole plan had to have a two-state component so that the Arab states could swallow it, so other people can swallow it. But essentially, as, by the way, the enemies of Israel are already pointing out, it's not a peace plan, it's an annexation plan. That is what the kind of enemies of this plan are calling it. But there's a truth to it, which is the plan is to actually annex right now. What's going to come down the line is going to depend on the Arabs. But the Arab states, that they would agree to it, means that the truth is that the Arabs are looking for a way out of supporting the PA, out from fighting Israel. They want Israel to be on their side for two reasons. One, for economic prosperity. And two, maybe really one, is for the protection against Iran. And two, is for economic prosperity. And three, is because they've realized that the damn war is over. That's what I've been trying to say to people. What the Arabs understand is the damn war is over. It's over. It's not going to happen. And so they want a way out. They want a way. I don't know. Do we have in English like a phrase like this? Like, come down off the tree. That's a Israeli phrase. Like get off the high horse and just be like, okay. And so suddenly you're seeing Arab countries. Now, this is a big blow to two elements, both to the PA leadership. I want to start calling it the PA leadership as opposed to the Palestinians. I don't agree with that term. Not because I don't like the term Palestinians, but also because I think the people are not the same as the leadership, same as in Iran. So the PA leadership is shocked. Oh, my God, the Arab countries sold us out. That was like a stalwart thing. And another group is the Europeans. The Europeans are always like, Trump, he's an idiot. He's a buffoon. There's no way, you know, whatever he comes out of his mouth will be against. But now you have like normative Arab countries like Saudi Arabia lining up with Trump and Israel. The Europeans that are anti-Israel are like, what the heck? What are they going to say now, that they know better than the Arabs? What's good for the Arabs? So that put them in. I think that was a shocking thing.
Yeah, there's an interesting concept in like Muslim negotiating theory, you know, whereby negotiations only happen when one party is much stronger, like squeezing another party. That's the only framework in which negotiations would happen, because otherwise you're just in war. You know, negotiations is when both sides realize that the war is over, and this is kind of like a restoring some semblance of stability for the period going for, you know, into the future. And so the fact that Israel gets so much more in this deal than was presented in like the Oslo Accords or in 1948 is because Israel is so much stronger today. And exactly like you said, the Arab countries have recognized that the war against Israel is over. Israel won that war. The Arab countries cannot take Israel off the map. The Arab countries don't even think that Iran can take Israel off the map. Quite the opposite. They recognize that Israel could take Iran off the map. So they're also running out of money, because these are Gulf states and Gulf oil is drying up. And as President Trump has managed to do, the United States is now an exporter of oil, is the world's largest exporter of oil. They're not importing Saudi oil. They don't need it. Okay, so the Gulf states recognize that the power and the money is with the Americans and is with Israel. And they want to be with that because they need that for their future. And they're basically saying, Palestinians, take what you have right now, and we're all going to invest $50 billion into infrastructure for you so you can start to live like better people, which is an opportunity that nobody else in the region is getting. Just take it, and this conflict is over.
Alex, you know, when I started thinking about pro-Israel ideas many years ago, when I was thinking about pro-Israel ideas so many years ago, the first thought I ever had, the first I remember so clearly, I remember even where I was. I was next to NYU down in Manhattan. And I remember thinking, imagine if there was a rail that connected to the Eurorail up in Istanbul and would go down through Israel and would go all the way to Alexandria in Egypt through the Sinai, through Alexandria, and one that would go to a different line that would go east towards Mecca and Medina, towards Baghdad, and maybe crossing all the way into the Persian Gulf. I just thought to myself, I had this vision of this amazing railroad that really got you to all the great points of the Middle East. It was just like a dream, and it was a dream of a better Middle East. I think I saw a glimpse of that here, like right now. I saw a glimpse of that. The end of the 100 Years War, the realization that Israel is here to stay, the acceptance of Israel as a regional partner, a regional Semitic partner, like the Kurds, like us, but a little bit different. You know, not that the Kurds are in great shape yet, but I'm saying that kind of thing, which is like, okay, they're part of the tapestry of the Middle East. And the haters are just shrinking right now. They're just shriveling away. And they are, and that's the big thing, Alex. The big thing is today, the Jewish, Israeli, and American conservative, or as we call it here in Israel, it's a bad term in America, right wing. We're the ones with a vision for peace. We're the ones with a vision for the future. We're the ones with a vision for cooperation. The other ones, the so-called liberal left, they're segregationists. They want walls. They want shrinkage. They want Israel to not. And it's like they're not with the times. And you and I were standing just a few minutes ago on the roof of this building here in Talpiot, a very high building. We just saw this amazingly huge and beautiful Jerusalem, and so bustling. There's something about the moment that we're living in. You were telling me about this before, which is like, there's a sense of geula, a sense of redemption, a real sense of like something huge is happening here.
Well, President Trump 2 years ago recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, right? And that's a geopolitical idea. It's also a spiritual idea. On the geopolitical level, the energy that comes with the capital of being Israel, now the world sees that energy is correct. And Israel also has this concept of becoming the capital of the entire Middle East. You said not that Israel is like a part of the fabric of the Middle East or similar to the Kurds. No, Israel is the capital of the Middle East in the new Middle East. And that's a totally different energy that begins to come down with Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as being the capital of Israel.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point. That's a very good point. And it is a capital of the Middle East, right? You got Jerusalem, then you got the other, you know, great and important cities. You know, it's like the American Northeast. I'm always taken by the American Northeast as this, like, on the one hand, there's these, like, important cities, Washington and New York and Boston. But then if you, like, actually realize that it's one long power stretch of these important cities.
Right.
And they're the most kind of united, transportation, most electricity. It's like a hub in this world. That's what Jerusalem is also. It's a hub that connects all these Middle East countries.
And one of the best models of a functioning or forward-thinking Arab state is United Arab Emirates.
Right.
You know, and that's the concept of five tribes, basically, very large tribes that kind of live together. Each governs themselves, like they have their own state and local municipal laws, whatever that means. But they all sit in like a single nation. And really, that's a model for the entire Middle East, because you have these tribes pocketed all over the Middle East. And the lines that were drawn by the French and by the British after World War II were false lines. And there's a much better concept of just letting different cultural groups in the Middle East you know, live together and govern themselves like emirates. And in a sense, that's also what this plan represents for Palestinians, which is to have your own little emirate that gets very seriously invested into right now inside of Israel.
Right.
You know, and that's the concept of the plan.
So that's very interesting what you're saying. You're saying something a little bit different than I've heard before. You're linking up the Kedar, Professor Mordechai Kedar's Emirates plan for the Palestinians, as in here's your kind of city states and you live in them. You're saying that this plan really essentially is leading into that. It's called Palestine, but basically it's more like Arab cities with tribal groups living together throughout the land, economically integrated, self governance in their big city, but basically economically integrated. Look, I want to say that sounds great. That sounds really great. But, and there's a but here. The but here is that part of the Palestinian ideology is going to be converted, and part of it has to be defeated. Okay? The converted is the people who are like on the fence and are like, well, should we go with Israel or against Israel? We've been going against Israel for a long time. Some of those people are hardcore, like a Hamas type of hardcore or Islamic Jihad type of hardcore. They're an ISIS type group. They've got to be defeated in order for Israel to move forward with this plan that you're talking about of economic integration.
You know, one of the triggers before the implementation of the plan is the total demilitarization, not just of the West Bank, Judea, and Samaria, but also of the Gaza Strip,
right,
which is controlled by Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a terror enclave, the entire Gaza Strip, okay? But the plan doesn't say who or how that place is demilitarized. It just says that it needs to be demilitarized,
right?
So it could very well be that a Palestinian leadership might say, hey, we want to take this plan. We'll cut out the incitement. We'll stop the pay to slay. But we don't have the capacity to demilitarize Gaza because they have all the guns and we don't, right? So it very well may be that Israel defends itself by itself, implements this plan, maybe with the United States, maybe with Egypt, who knows, mm-hmm, cleaning out Gaza and right, defeating them militarily once and for all and completely demilitarizing them.
But Alex Trayman, JNS.org, Jerusalem Bureau Chief, you said something there, though, that was like, it changed the perspective for me here, which is what you're saying is what a lot of my friends in the ultra-nationalist camp. But by the way, when people call me or my friends ultra-nationalist, I don't take that as a slur. Like, being ultra-nationalist is like being a great dad and a great family man.
That's like getting a button-down shirt that's ultra-slim.
That's right. Something like that. That's right. Something like that. Okay? Ultra-nationalist. What's wrong with that? Ultra-nationalist. So what you're saying, though, is that my ultra-national friends are upset about this idea of a Palestinian state. But what you're saying is, no, it can be, if indeed this plan is implemented, this could be reduced to friendly Arab tribes living within Israel in their self-governing areas. Did I hear that right?
I mean, it's even more than that. It's listen, there's 7 million Palestinians living in Israel. You know, that's it. And unless you have some plan to,
you mean from the Jordan River west?
Yeah, between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean.
Right.
And within Judea
seven
and Samaria.
How did you count that?
Approximately five to seven.
Yeah.
Okay, in that area. Okay.
Right. Just checking.
And particularly in Judea and Samaria, to about 2 million.
Yeah.
Right. But they're concentrated into areas. And basically, right, this plan says the areas where Palestinians live, they will continue to live there.
All right.
You know that, but any areas where they don't live, that you're going to annex that.
Right.
Including the places where all settlers, every single settler that lives in Judea and Samaria, is just going to be a citizen of Israel now, because there's going to be no different distinction.
All right. Here's an interesting thing. I was on I-24 the other day, and the last question that they asked me, they're like, hey, you know, all right, we got the idea of the plan, but here's the question. Is Prime Minister Netanyahu, who is right now dealing with this accusation, which is now leading to a charge, he's actually being indicted and going to be hauled into court. Like, this is happening right now. immediately after the announcement yesterday, it was actually the indictment came through. Right? Is that the right way of saying it? Or was it the
indictments were formally filed in court. Charges were filed in court.
Okay, good. And President Trump is also, he's not on the ropes maybe, but he's being impeached by the United States government. Will the impeachment go through? No, you know, but okay, it's definitely happening. So people are like, how likely is it that they asked me in I-24, how likely is it that this is going to take place? I said to them, I've got to take off my, I didn't say use this line exactly, but I said, I have to give you a spiritual answer. I should have said, I have to take off my spokesman hat and put on my rabbi hat. And the rabbi hat says, when great things are about to happen, when good energy is trying to effectuate change in this world, the dark forces come out and try to pull them down. Right? So tremendous efforts to try to pull down these great men, and I bless them to be successful. But then I had a second thought last night, which is, no. It's because that was my spiritual, God's in charge of the world and there's dark forces and happy forces in this world. But the other way of looking at it is, no, it's because these two men are being scrutinized and the screws are being tightened on them. It's because of that that they've gone to this big thing. This thing forced them into taking bold steps that will please the people and make them look awesome instead of some kind of diplomatic, you know, old style thing. Like, they went big because they were forced to go big, and that's also okay. That's also a good part of God's hand.
Well, I think it's important to recognize that this plan wasn't developed in the last several weeks. You know, from the very first moments of the Trump administration, Jared Kushner was put on the project of, you know, solving the Middle East conflict. And that took place with a lot of consultations with the Prime Minister of Israel, with the Ambassador of Israel to the United States, Ron Dermer. And these guys have framed this plan for a long time. And they actually wanted to release this plan about a year and a half ago. But then Netanyahu was on the ropes and called early elections. And the U.S. administration has held back the release of the plan for that time. And like we talked a little bit about the timing before, I think they felt it was very important to get this plan out while that four-year window will expire in a second Trump term.
You know who else was on the ropes, Alex? So we said Netanyahu, Trump. You know who else was on the ropes? Pharaoh. He was on the ropes. Okay, he was on the ropes. By the way, Moses was also on the ropes one time when the Jews were like, hey, you came down to help us. You've only done is hurt us. They're like impeaching him, right? But he overcame that. But Pharaoh's on the ropes. This week's Torah portion is Bo Diddley, right? Bo Derek? No, Bo as in come face Pharaoh in his throne room. Come kind of face him. Now the Kabbalah says the reason it says Bo, come to Pharaoh, is because you have to, sometimes the good energy has to come into the bad energy and destroy it. Remember the Matrix scene at the very end, the way he defeats the agent is by actually going into him and blowing him up from within. So the Kabbalah says that Moshe Rabbeinu had to kind of go into the Sitra Achra, into the negative energy to destroy it. But in any case, he's facing Pharaoh, and he's going to hit him with some big guns. He's going to hit him with the locusts. He's going to hit him with the darkness, and he's going to hit him with the strike on the firstborns, the death of the firstborns, right? The Makat B'chorot. That's the big guns. That's the major, like, that's the nuclear weapon. That's when you fought a big war in the Pacific, but finally you dropped a nuclear bomb. This was the nuclear bomb. And even Pharaoh himself, according to the Midrash, suffered because his own son was killed, although he himself was spared, although he was a firstborn. And you just know at this point that there's going to be a victory for the Jewish people. There's going to be a victory. There's going to be a defeat of the pharaonic control. The minute that there's obvious move towards defeat of Pharaoh, God starts to unveil a second plan, which is, here come the mitzvot. Here's the commandments. Here's the new month. That's all I want you to start counting now from this new month. And then I want you to prepare for Pesach. And then I want you to keep a Pesach. I want you to have a Paschal sacrifice. I want you to eat the matzah. And you're now that you got the baseline of being free, now at the very moment, right before you're free, I just want you to know you're moving over to another paradigm, which is the paradigm of keeping the Torah and keeping the commandments. The reason I say this to you, Alex, is because I wanted your thoughts on this. Last night I had this realization, or maybe it was this morning, that there was a feeling last night that we won a war that we've been fighting for the last 50 years to be sovereign in Judea and Samaria, that this is the essential homeland. And it was recognized as such, and not only by America, but also by our prime minister and our people. The front page of today's Yisrael Hayom said Ribonut Achshav. It said sovereignty now. Okay? So it was a great, great victory. And then in my heart I said, now it's time for the next war. And that next war is bringing Judaism to the Jewish people. It's time to teach Torah. Now that we're winning the land war, now that the 100 years war with the Arabs is over, now that we're past the Holocaust and into economic prosperity, now the moment is to fight the next battle. And that next battle is the Battle of Kiruv, to bring Torah back to the nation the way it's supposed to be. What do you think?
Well, first of all, thank you for putting on the rabbinic hat, because like when we analyze the news, we don't usually include the rabbinic hat in the news. But I think that you see with the giving of mitzvot that God was saying, for 210 years, you worked for Pharaoh. Now you work for me. I'm coming in. I'm taking you out to work for me because you don't want to work for them. The only being that you'd want to work for is for me. So these are the things that you need to accomplish. There you needed to lay these bricks and make buildings. Here you have to lay different bricks. They're called mitzvot. And that's how you build a temple for me, you know, which is doing these mitzvot, which is basically the mitzvot are raw will of God. That's it. You're just building bricks of will of God in order to bring down the light of God into the world. We don't exactly know how that manifests, but that's what happens. And then there's the other thing that I think is just incredible about this story, which is you were talking about Pharaoh being up against the wall, that the story is very clear that God hardens Pharaoh's heart. Like, Pharaoh's free will was totally suspended, even though he thought that he was taking decisions, or it reads in the narrative like he's making decisions. No. God had decided that the Jewish people were being taken out of Egypt, and he took over everything that happened. He was completely manipulated the mental state of Paro. And you also see at the end of the Parsha, after the plagues, this is that the Egyptians gave all of the silver and all the gold and all the wealth to the Jewish people, because it says that God made the Jewish people like very valuable in their eyes, like, you know, that they looked very favorable in front of the Egyptians. When in all actuality, if your slaves all of a sudden came up and destroyed you, you wouldn't look favorably on them at all, right? But so you see that God just changed the way the entire nation of Egypt, which is the biggest nation in the world, thought, and he was also manipulating the thoughts of Paro, you know, because he took over. It's like, I usually run the world in a natural way in which people's decisions make sense. Now is a suspension of all that, and that's what the plagues represent also, it's complete suspension of nature. I'm just taking over. Nature is mine to play with. People's thoughts are mine to play with, if that's what I want to do with them. And in this moment, because it's a geula, it's a redemption of the Jewish people, it's a revelation of godliness, God takes over everything.
And what about what I was saying, the second part, which is that When we were in college together at Yeshiva University, I remember I read a book for one of my classes about letters from Birmingham jail by Martin Luther King. And one of the things that I remember stood out is he goes, and this was early in his fight for civil rights. I'll never forget this. He goes, I already see that we won the war. I already see that. We've already won in my mind. Now just the question is how many people are going to fall on the way and how are we going to achieve it, how fast. But it's like something happened last night, I think, which was like, I saw in my heart, and I think maybe you did as well, like the victory was there. It was somewhat assured. It was happening. And this next thought, which is, okay, so if we won the land battle, we've won the economic battle, we've won the wars, then what's really what's the next big thing? You know what I mean? And that thing, I think, is to bring Yiddishkeit, Judaism, Torah, back to the nation, to fall in love with it, to follow its ways. And that's not a simple battle to fight.
Well, I think we still have to recognize that we're fighting physical battles. We won a huge battle last night, but the physical war is nowhere near over. I mean, even this period, even this plan is a multi-year initiative that we're taking on. And of course, we also have this other existential threat in our region, which is Iran. And there's also many socioeconomic challenges that we have, and deficits, and infrastructures that need to be built up, like healthcare and other things. Like, still, Jews are not like abjectly wealthy in the way that I think that they're going to be in the future, when wealth just pours into the land of Israel on a spiritual and material level, and that Israel is also going to have peace and security with all of its neighbors, right? And once you have economic security and total physical military security, then you can breathe deep, right? And then start to say, no, now what we need to focus on is the spiritual existence. And that's why at the beginning of last week's Torah portion, Moses tells the entire people what is about to happen. Like, right. There's going to be these plagues. We're going to get out of here. We're going back to Israel. We're going to take over the lands in Israel. And it says that the people, they didn't believe because they had avodah kasha, the kotzer ruach. They had this hard work, this intense slavery, and also they had a shortness of breath, mm-hmm. right? And the ruach is also means spirit. It means that they had a short spirit. They were so caught up in the physical work that they had to do that they had no capacity to recognize what was about to happen on a spiritual level.
Right.
Right. But once the slavery ends and you see God's miracles, some of them, you all of a sudden have a different perspective, and you could take a deep breath and say, wow, something incredible is happening here.
Right.
And what I need to do is, instead of being working on these physical pursuits, which I was forced into, I had no choice, that now I'm going to work intensely on the spiritual pursuit.
Right.
And that's how you bring the light of Torah and the light of godliness into the world.
One more point about yesterday's event. My wife made this point to me. Maybe we'll discuss it with her on the next segment, which is with Malka Fleischer. There were beautiful diaspora Jews in that room. Great Jews. Jews have done great things. One of them happened to be, in my mind, Dershowitz. He's looking very sprightly, and I saw him in the Senate defending the president, doing his thing. You know, and he's an enigmatic character. Well, one thing I've always liked about Dershowitz is that he's a fighter. And I just like fighters. He's a prize fighter. He's a fighter. He's out there fighting for the Jewish people. There were many great diaspora Jews there, and there was, how should I say, a great diaspora moment where a fusion between the diaspora Jew and the court Jew, and I don't mean that in a negative sense. I mean the court Jew as in Jew that works in the foreign court and knows how to help, you know, move it along in the right direction. And the Israeli Jew, like, combined. Right? There was like a moment where it was like Nehemiah in the land of Israel and Nehemiah in the court in one moment. Or maybe Joseph and Judah came together. You know what I mean? What, did you see that moment yesterday?
Well, I think that two men that personify what you're speaking about the most in this entire situation, and we're in that room yesterday, were the ambassadors of each country to the other, which is an Israeli ambassador to the United States, Ron Dermer, who was born in Miami Beach to the son of the mayor of Miami Beach and has been Netanyahu, a senior advisor for many years before becoming the ambassador to the United States. And then David Friedman, also a religious Jew, who was the president of the American Friends of Beit El, one of the larger and more ideological settlements in Samaria, who was also the bankruptcy lawyer for Donald Trump, and becomes the ambassador all of a sudden to the state of Israel. And the teams led by these two men have been working extremely closely on all the details of this plan for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you said, both these guys that grew up in the diaspora,
right,
not knowing that they were going to end up in these spots later, especially Friedman, who only, you know, 6 months before he became the ambassador, never could have dreamed that he would be the ambassador to the state of Israel.
Right.
Maybe Dermer had some ideas, you know, because he's been doing this for a long time.
Right.
But that these two guys come together in a way that was unexpected, almost in the way that Joseph and and Yehuda came together, neither one knew or was expecting that the brothers were going to meet, you know, at that time, and that the two Mashiachs, Yosef and Yehuda, were going to be standing next to each other.
Right.
And not even necessarily recognizing at that time that each one was the other.
Yeah. And you know what? Somebody gave me a thought in shul. He said to me, the two different Mashiachs, Yehuda and Yosef, they also stand for a different kind of energy in this world. One is the diaspora Jewish. Joseph is the diaspora Jewish success. And Judah is the land of Israel-based success. And they a lot of times they conflict. The Torahs are different, et cetera, et cetera. But they can come together. They can come together. And there was something in yesterday's event, which was a coming together, One of our good friends was there, and actually quite a few, many good friends was there. Dory Gold, by the way, was there. He did a great job this morning on Galei Tzal, on Army Radio, did a great job explaining it. I just was very, very kind of impressed with him, sent him a message. Excellent.
Dory Gold was also the Director General of the Foreign Ministry during the first year and a half of Netanyahu's last term, you know, which also coincided. He also met many times with Kushner and all of them. You know, these are the guys who were involved in building this.
Amazing. Well, anyway, folks, we are definitely living through monumental times. One more thing, Alex, it's important that that we mention this, is the World Zionist Organization, WZO elections that are happening right now. And I really want everybody that listens to my show certainly to go to azm.org, sign up for $7.50, and vote. Now, there are many great slates that are out there right now, including the Vision Slate, which is really all about empowering young people, like the college-age kids, which we think we're losing to anti-Israelism. No, this slate is moving them into the position of affecting Zionism, of using the vehicles that the state has created to continue to purchase land in Judea and Samaria, to involve young people, to turn them onto the story of Zionism by selling to them and what's their exciting next generation's role. That's one. The good folks at Mizrahi and the OEU holding the kind of religious line, the Torah of in the land of Israel and also in the diaspora. The good folks at ZOA, which is really the ZOA coalition, is the Likud and all the great Knesset members of the Likud kind of with their messaging. And there's other slates. There's the Chirut slate, which is the Jabotinsky slate. And I think it's also important to mention the Sephardi slate, which I think is a great religious Sephardi slate.
Also a slate of Israelis living in America, you know.
IAC, I'm not sure. Are they running independently?
They're in part of one of the slates. You know?
Yeah. There are 15 slates. I highly recommend everybody take a look.
Also, the Reform Movement has a slate. The Conservative Movement has a slate. There's certainly some, like, staunchly progressive left-wing Jewish slates. I think what's the most interesting and giving people reason why they should want to vote for people to take part of this forum is that there's like 500 delegates, I understand, and about a third of them come from the State of Israel, two-thirds from diaspora communities. And the representatives to the World Zionist Congress from the State of Israel are the 120 Knesset members, right? So these are the elected leaders of the Jewish nation. And so this forum puts them basically on equal footing in a Congress with leaders from all over the Jewish world. So I think that's something really interesting to think about. I mean, in a way, you're almost getting elected to at least a distinguishment, whatever that word would be, that you're on par with a Knesset member, for at least for the purposes of this forum, which is to discuss the future of Zionism.
And also to allocate billions of shekels worth of money for things like the JNF purchasing parts of the land of Israel instead of selling it out to somebody else. And that's again here, folks, I guess that theme dovetails, which is we can come together. Diaspora Jews, certainly you can always make Aliyah, come to the land of Israel, we're always calling you here. But in the meantime, to be united as a united front. And I think ironically, this moment in America was also the greatest achievement, the greatest recent achievement of American Jewry. The greatest achievement of American Jewry was Russian Jewry. I always say that. And there's a few others, like Art Scroll. I think that the Art Scroll Talmud is like the new Babylonian Talmud. That's an American thing that was created. And there are other great achievements. But this was a great achievement yesterday, and it was coming together of both Torah, the land of Israel, and the people of Israel around the world.
Right, and at the same time, there are Jewish groups in the United States that are very vocal
right.
about their opposition to this plan and the leaders that are introducing this plan, just saying it is bad for Israel, it's bad for the Jews, it's bad for America, it's bad for Palestinians, it's bad for the world.
Right.
And, you know, that's really anybody that saw the energy, you know, if you didn't understand the politics and you just felt the energy of what happened with the leader of the free world and the prime minister of the state of Israel standing together and saying, this is what we're going to do. And we both agree that it's for Israel's benefit. You know, it's just, are you with the same united purpose of being Jewish wherever you live, or are you fighting against that? And why are you fighting against that?
Mm-hmm. I think I tweeted about that, that when my Judaism, hashtag my Judaism, is separated out from traditional Judaism, the authentic Judaism, right. when you change it to fit you, which is a kind of idolatrization of it, when it fits your values instead of you fitting to its values, then the miracle of the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel is called an occupation. Our presence on the Temple Mount is an instigation, et cetera, et cetera. So when you turn it to be not what it really is supposed to be, then your values get screwed up, and then you don't see, sadly, the great miracle. And really, the story of Egypt is in large measure the story of redemption, but not totally, because in measure, it's also the story of the people who didn't buy into it, the story of the 80% who missed it, okay? Who did not merit redemption and got swallowed up with the dark side.
And if I can just turn it back towards the realpolitik today, you have a lot of that Jewish opposition or progressive opposition to what I consider to be real progress, which is happening now. It's fed by a media industry that really wants to promote this negativity.
Yeah.
And if I can just do a little shameless promotion at the end, is that I really think that the majority of the Jewish media outlets, at least certainly that dominate the market share, and, you know, I'll name names, Haaretz, Times of Israel, even Jerusalem Post to an extent, and the JTA, the Forward, and many others are very vocal and have a lot of readers while they're promoting this distorted reality of what's happening and what's possible for Israel, for the Middle East, for the U.S.-Israel relationship, and promoting values that are really not in line with the majority of Israel supporters around the world, particularly Jews and evangelical Christians.
Right.
And I think that JNS strives to report the news in a way that's very much in line with what's happening. Like it's right on the news. But it's understanding why things are actually happening and explaining what's happening in line with the thinking of the administrations that are running these two countries and the majority of voters, especially in Israel, that voted for this administration for the last 10 years. This is where the people are. And so we report along the lines of where people actually are and looking through the lens of current events in a way that we think that people actually want. So,
excellent point, Alex. That's a very important point. We are in an age of information, and we're also in an age of disinformation. And so when you have an outlet that gives you information and also inspiration, because information is inspiration when you're living in this kind of time, it's absolutely an essential part of the diet. Make sure that your diet includes healthy news. Right, like beet greens. Okay, it's like healthy news, organic news that really connects you to what's happening in the land. And okay, it's, you know, and with that, you could also see through these images, you could also see the great process of redemption that's happening. All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show. Alex Trayman in beautiful Yerushalayim. Thank you so much, JNS.org. You are the Jerusalem Bureau Chief. That's a big deal. That's a big schut to be the Jerusalem Bureau Chief of news coming out of Tzion. Ki mitzion tetzet Torah. You are listening to Yishai Fleischer Show, and I would like to hear from you, so please write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. Stay tuned, because Malka Fleischer is up next. She's raring to go. She's been psyched about what's happening here in the land of Israel. And, of course, also the folks at Hebron, we've also benefited, we think, from this deal of the century. We issued a communique yesterday, really thanking the administrations, saying that we're still against a Palestinian state, but we are for economic cooperation, certainly, and that we think this is definitely progress. But in order to keep that progress going, you have to come there and show yourselves, the world, the Arabs, the Jews, the governments, the Americans, that this is part of the story. So please come to Hebron by visiting us at hebronfund.org and come on our weekly tour. Alex Shaiman, thanks a lot again.
Thank you, Shai.
Josh Eason here, Israel Uncensored, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com. Listen to my show this week with Ambassador Yoram Edinger, who discusses the upcoming Trump deal of the century.
The so-called deal of the century may subordinate Middle East reality, never to devise a plan based on best-case scenario.
Tune in for the full exclusive interview here on my show, Israel Uncensored, on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.
Shalom, everybody, and welcome back to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting live from Judea. And you're a part of it wherever you are. And if we're in Judea, we're in the home of Malka Fleisher,
yes,
our beloved show hostess with the mostess. Malka, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
I want to also thank you for another thing. Recently, I've been working hard, mm-hmm. and also dealing with some just nervousness.
Sure.
And
you're Jewish. You're Ashkenazi.
Right. Right. Not too Ashkenazi, though. Let's keep that in perspective. You know how I feel about that. I'm not overly Ashkenazi. And you, being just an awesome Hungarian wife.
Yes.
Purchased for me some cookies and cream, Ben and Jerry's
yes,
ice cream.
Yes, I may have done that.
Which is Chalav Yisroel. Okay.
Yes.
And just a minute ago, just feeling a little tense, I went to the freezer.
Yeah, you want to go comfort eat?
Yeah, I comfort ate a little bit.
Nice.
Went right to my tummy. You know, a minute on the lips, a lifetime on the hips. But I feel so good.
Yeah.
Now.
Are there good cookie pieces in there?
That's what I was. Yeah, it's quite good.
Nice.
And it's Chalav Yisroel. It's made here in Israel. You may ask whether I support the Ben and Jerry's ethos. It's really not important. It's a franchise, and the folks here have made it oftentimes clear to Israelis, like,
that they do not participate in the politics.
Right. Like, don't worry about that. It's just enjoy the ice cream. So I do. I wanted to thank you for that. And
you're
welcome. I just feel a lot better. Also, you and I had a very special meeting today. We had a date.
Yes.
We went to, it was the funniest thing that ever happened, really. I'm laughing at the, it was very memorable, I think. We went, there was a movie, an Israeli movie that I wanted to see.
Yeah.
Which was about an Israeli couple that wants to get pregnant and stuff. And it was just like it's an Israeli movie that I saw reviews for. And you and I went to catch a matinee.
Yes.
In the afternoon.
Which we have never done.
We have never done. And this movie was in its last legs.
We don't go and see movies in the movie theater in general.
Yeah, no, we've done it three times in our married life in 16, 17 years. But we went to a movie which its last showing was in the afternoon. And you were in Jerusalem and I was in Jerusalem. And we went to see a movie. And it was so fun. Because we went to one of these really fancy movie theaters that they have now in Jerusalem. And we were the only ones in the theater. Just me and you. It was like the whole world was just made for me and you, Malka, right?
Aww.
And it was a fine film. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody, but it was also fine. It wasn't like the biggest winner in the world, but it was fun to be at that movie theater just for us. And just those little things, you know, when you live a life that's intense and a war and a battle to make Judea and Samaria ours, and to fight off all the evil forces, and you're on Twitter and you got to raise money and do things, and you got to raise the kids, and the roof has leaked recently. The roof in our apartment has leaked recently.
Not terribly, not like bucket under
not
the
terribly.
Leak.
Not terribly. I'm just
level.
Saying that sometimes a little bit of ice cream. A kosher Chalav Yisroel ice cream and a film in Jerusalem, you know, it'll bring you back to that feeling of a good life. I do want to comment one more thing about the leaky roof. We had some leaks, and I was really happy about it. I was really happy about it. The reason I was happy about it was because I was like, good. We shouldn't live a life where we're totally insulated from nature, as though outside it's raining, but inside it's just it's as though our life is Teflon'd out. You know what? In Tel Aviv got flooded. People even died in the floods. And our house had a sprang a leak a little bit, and I was happy about that. I was happy that there was like some water that was like it said something to me like, you're still primal. You guys are still human animals.
Still connected to the earth.
You're still connected to the earth. And the water, it's powerful. It's powerful also on you. And you're not like totally like, you know, isolated from it. So I was happy for that. And in fact, my little office room sprang a little leak, and I was like, good on you, water.
Really?
Yeah. In my heart, I was like, good
really?
For
That's
you.
Funny, because I was like, oh.
Well, there's obviously the aspect of, oh, but there's also the aspect of, good on you. You know what I mean? You know, I don't know. Maybe it was a little bit of like, mi'afar bata ve'afar teshuv, like from the earth you came and to the earth you'll return. Like things, we humans, our lives, we're not permanent, and these structures aren't permanent. There's something, I don't know. You know, Malka, about me. I have this other side, which I like to access sometimes, which is that Zen side.
Yeah.
You know the Zen thing that I like?
Sure. Eastern Yishai.
Eastern Yishai.
Yeah.
When will that be vented? When will that be given expression? Okay, so that was my like. There's a line in one of my Zen books that's like, the cracked cup is perfect.
Right. There's a whole like art in Japan of fixing cracks with gold as like part of as like to symbolize that the crack is actually like part of the journey of this item, and it's part of the story, and you put like a gold, some gold in the crack.
I love it. I love that stuff. I don't know why. I find it to be very, very calming. Very, very calming. Very,
well, that's nice that you felt calming, Yishai, because this was not a calming week.
No, it was, the whole preface of the show,
yeah,
of the segment is that it was anything but calm. It
right.
was so intense. And if you think about it now, I know in America you and outside of, I know people listening all over the world, Canada and England and Australia and all over the world, wherever you are, I know that you guys have your own issues and tensions. But here, with that whole 75 of Auschwitz, 75th anniversary, and all the world leaders coming.
Right.
And the vice president inviting Trump to the White House, inviting Netanyahu to the Trump White House. And then the whole Nama Yisachar, the girl who's
right,
in Russian
prison. Right,
who's now out of jail. It was just a flurry. And if you're like in it, if these things are important. And then, as I talked about in the last half hour, to watch that Trump presentation, and then to also hear things that were great. And I want to tell you that even from the hours that I recorded the last segment with Alex,
yeah,
more thoughts have sprung up to me, which is like, on the one hand, you know, on the one hand, the beauty of recognition of Jewish Judea. But on the other hand, like, why does it have to come with this recognition of a different entity, of a so-called
Palestinian
entity, right, on our homeland. And I sent out a tweet, which I think was one of my more like successful tweets recently. I just sent out a picture, and I'm like, here's the deal of a century ago. And it was a picture of the whole land of Israel,
right?
You know, and that's what was being offered on the table,
right,
to be Jewish, including Jordan.
Right.
And I said, this was the deal of a century ago, before the British gave away, created a Jordan, and before the Oslo process created a Palestinian Authority.
Right.
That was the land of Israel. So 100 years later, I mean, you can't compare the fantastic successes of the State of Israel with the pre-state era in the early state era. Like, we're so far ahead. And yet, you know, even our great friend, the President of the United States, Donald Trump, cannot eviscerate the ideas of the land giveaways, although he's done a lot towards doing
right.
that. Anyway, so...
Well, but I just want to say that one thing that I found kind of exciting, like this announcement of this new peace deal was exciting to a lot of people. And mm-hmm. it wasn't just exciting, you know, we've had so many of these peace deals that have been announced by U.S. administrations where people like you and I, Yishai, wouldn't be excited at all. We'd be miserable and we'd
right.
be angry and we would find pretty much no good in the entire thing.
Right.
In this scenario, let's not mince any words. You and I, we're not in favor of the creation of a Palestinian state. We are against the creation of a Palestinian state.
Indeed.
However, this plan, many of us saw this as not the kind of emphasis of this plan, not as much on the fact that it would create a Palestinian state as it is that it would finally assert Jewish sovereignty over places that for decades and decades we've had a hard time expressing out loud that we want to assert sovereignty over.
Right.
And one of the things that I thought was kind of moving about this whole process, and I've said this before on the show about other things, and here you'll find me saying it again, is that in this period in which politics is like such a big thing, we're about to have a national election on March 2nd, right? Yeah. And it now is really the time for like all the politicians to really like hunker down in their corners. You know what I mean? And I represent this and he represents that. And I stand for this policy. And because I stand for this policy, surely this guy is against it, right? Or I'm against this policy and this guy's for it. And like everyone taking their corners.
Yep.
But in this scenario in which all Israel understood that what we're talking about is much less about giving the Arabs a state in and around Ramallah as it is about taking Hebron and saying, this is ours.
That's right.
The whole country was basically like, yep.
That's right. Including Benny Gantz.
You had, exactly. And that is what I find so cool. Bibi's in. Gantz is in. Litzman's in. Derry's in.
Right.
Lieberman's in.
Right.
Everyone's in.
Right.
Basically, amongst the not far left camp.
Right.
Everyone's like, you know what? Okay. Yeah. Like, let's talk about sovereignty. Let's start doing sovereignty. And everyone got really, really excited to like do it like tomorrow. All the meetings were set to basically establish and set, Israeli sovereignty over the Jordan Valley, like starting next week.
Right.
Now, it happens to be that those meetings got pulled back because there's some technical things and they're pushing it off. And like, we can't like, jump the gun, as it were, for some reason.
You know what gets me excited, Malka?
What?
If indeed that happens, with the help of God, it'll happen soon, that Israel will be sovereign to more land, the physical maps will have to change.
Right.
Like maps. I look forward to that. I look forward to those things.
And another thing that was very interesting to me was that you had Oman, United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain. They sent their ambassadors to did I get that right?
You got it right, but there was also
they sent their ambassadors to Washington
to
this event, which was unbelievable. Like you wouldn't even think you could get them all in the same room with representatives of Israel for any given reason, right? Just for like anything at all. And they came for this, which was like something that was meant to establish Jewish sovereignty. And the word Jewish came up multiple times for anyone who watched the speeches all the way through. And then Saudi Arabia put its seal of approval on this deal as a framework for beginning negotiation, right? And so it created like a weird situation in the international community, because under any other parameters, the EU would have been like, oh, there goes Trump again. And there goes those Jews again. So no, of course we stand like diametrically opposed to this.
We're rational as opposed to those.
Right. You guys are nuts.
Nationalist, biblical minded, all
exactly.
that.
Exactly. You guys are nuts. So like, I think you all know that we totally stand against this in a single voice. We stand against this thing.
Right.
But instead it's like, no one has anything to say. The Palestinian Authority is like, where are all our friends?
Right.
The Arab League did come out against the plan, but like not as a crazy, you know, remember what it used to be like when the Arab League came out against stuff?
Right.
It was like tanks started rolling on borders. That's what it looked like when the Arab League came out against stuff.
Right.
And now it's like, we're not really in favor of this plan, which does not allow the Palestinians their rights. And that's about where it stops. A day after all this goes on, the president of Russia makes a grand gesture to Israel and releases this Israeli backpacker who had been found with a bunch of marijuana in her bag.
I think it was hash.
Whatever. Okay. Some gateway drug. Okay. Yeah. They found a gateway drug in her bag.
Gateway to put her, slam her to prison.
And she was in jail for 10 months.
That's
a long time.
Yeah, a long time.
But nonetheless, he used this moment, right? Which to me is not nothing. It's sort of another like getting in on the wave of like pro-Israel sentiment that's going out in certain circles. Now, again, you know, with all that and with our enthusiasm to apply sovereignty, you're right, Ishai. It is not a full, we haven't like grown up all the way. We didn't turn 18 on this one. We maybe turned 13. You know what I mean? It was maybe like a bar mitzvah for the Jewish people or something like that in terms of how mature we are with our message and with our identity as a Jewish people and what this, what, talking about what this land means to us. I think it definitely was a symbol of our maturation, kind of, that we were able to say yes with basically one voice. We were able to say yes, we want our land. But nonetheless, as you said, of course, Ishai, it was all couched in these terms of coming up with a deal which would also give some of our land to a Palestinian state. Of course, I'm sure you went through with Alex the analysis about how this, you know, a Palestinian state will likely not even come to fruition because the Palestinian Authority will not agree and et cetera, et cetera. But it would be nice if we could just skip the Palestinian state part and get right to the sovereignty part.
I want to tell you that I saw Secretary of State Pompeo on the news today, and he said, well, what are we asking from the Palestinians here? We're just asking them for the regular stuff, which is don't fund terror, don't teach terror, and you're not bringing refugees into Israel, and that Jerusalem is Israel's capital, like, and recognize Israel as the Jewish state. So it's like we're asking for the most basic things. And I think that that's also an important
part. Right. Well, the world has become so accustomed to treating Palestinians like their natural reaction is violence and chaos that they forgot that they can be held accountable. Like, they think that the Israelis always like dehumanize Palestinians when actually they are dehumanizing them by not treating them like regular citizens of this planet, people who have to act normally in order to be treated normally.
You know who was a big dehumanizer, Malka? Pharaoh and the Egyptian system.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite holiday, Malka?
It really as the calendar kind of circles, that it always a little bit changes. I think Sukkot is really my favorite holiday.
I think that you're
my favorite one is Pesach.
Because your birthday is right after Pesach.
I know, but this year I don't feel so excited about
that. We are so happy that you're turning 19, sweetie.
People.
Sweetie, I can't believe you're the youngest bride ever. You continue. Mm-hmm. You're perpetually 19, even though we got married 16 years ago. And people can wonder about that. but you're perpetually 19. I want to say, or 29, okay? I want to say that the story of Pesach is hot on the topic this week, Malka. Exodus.
Movement of the people.
Now, it's not actually happening. It's the full-on Exodus is next week's Torah portion. That's the they actually start to leave in this week's portion. But the big splitting of the Red Sea is next week. But you know what this week, Malka, is?
What's that?
It's the Passover.
Mm-hmm.
It's the old
passing over.
And interesting, you say Passover. It's just like the word Pesach. It sounds similar. But a Pesach means that, like, God passed over the Jewish people and he struck the other guys, right?
The bad guys.
And Hashem, also in this week's Parsha, puts darkness on Egypt and the Jewish people had light. Like, the Jewish people are discriminated against in a positive way. After their slavery, which they were discriminated against negatively for a long time, suddenly God is biased towards them and gives them light. And it's like their light was turned off for a long time, but they held on and they held on and they held on. And suddenly their light got turned on.
Right.
Suddenly their light got turned on. It suddenly became obvious that God is with the Jews. And everybody's like, Pharaoh, come on. Let these people go. You know what I mean? Because God is fighting for them. And I think to some extent, right, and so there's these, like, helpers of Pharaoh, and they're like, okay, Pharaoh, let's forget it, boy. Let's just let them go so we can not see Egypt get destroyed. And so they're on the right side of things, and then there's Pharaoh. He's like, no. And that's also the Arab world versus the Palestinians. The Arab world's like, okay, let's just forget it already, you know?
Yeah, can we just make a train system?
That's so strange. I talked about it in the last half
did
hour.
Did you?
Yeah, I talked about this train system.
You
psychically
do that.
Yeah, that's right. And they're like, let's just let the people go. And then there's like Farah, which is the, you know, the local Palestinian type faction, which is like, no, fight till the end. But everybody's like, but this fight
is over. It's like over. It's already over. And you don't even see that it's over.
And it's not even good for us, this fight anymore. It doesn't yield anything for us. It doesn't yield anything for us, first and foremost, because we can't win. That's the first reason. And the second one is now that we can't win, let's have some prosperity.
Right.
And but the first one is like we can't defeat the Jews. That like their light is shining. It's so obvious.
Right.
But then there's always some people who are like, Pharaoh will take it all the way to the end, and he will wreck his whole army, and get his all, you know, his whole forces to get swallowed up by the sea because of that stubbornness.
Right. Well, at some point, though, Isha, you know, Hashem already gave us in the prequel. Hashem basically explained that this was going to be like this, that no matter what, Paro was not going to let the people go until Hashem could make such a spectacle that it would be basically a story for all people for all time.
Yeah.
And that it would be like a big glorification of his name. So who knows, Ishai, and if you want to make a comparison to politics today, it could very well be that Abbas would love to take this deal, but that Hashem is hardening his heart for his own purposes.
All right, Malka Fleischer, I want to bless you with a wonderful Shabbat. The rain has come back to the land of Israel. It was drizzling today. In the morning, it was really raining. The roof has been mostly fixed.
I think it looks all right. Anything new?
No, and I'm just thankful to Hashem for the blessings of the rain, for the blessings of the Torah, for the blessings of the tension, for the blessings of cookies and cream by Ben and Jerry's Bat Chalav Yisroel, the blessings of the movie theater in Jerusalem, and the blessings of having a wonderful family, and that family is my family, our family, and also the family of Israel. And also the greater family of the folks who are listening to us right now.
That's right.
Who are also part of a kind of togetherness. And if we make you laugh, so send us a little hashtag, you make us laugh, or hashtag, you help us overcome the tension. Not detention, the tension. And I'm just saying that I think that's something that you and I believe in, which is a little bit of humor, a little bit of laughter is a way to get through it all. But that laughter is a Jewish laughter. It's not a laughter of denial. It's a laughter of seeing that God has done great things, and that we have had the honor of having a minuscule role in that great plan. So Shabbat Shalom, everybody, and God bless you wherever you are.
Shabbat Shalom, and wishing you all good news and good times.
Amen. God bless you, folks. Stay tuned, stay strong, stay connected. Oh, yeah. Thanks to Moshe Herman, Tabitha, and Ben Bresky for getting the show up to the world through the net waves. And you are receiving it. You're receiving love from Judea, the land of Israel, from Hebron, and from Yerushalayim, Yer Kodesh. As we said in the last half hour, Ki Mitzion Tetzeh Torah, Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim, and you're receiving that, and you're part of the story. Shalom, shalom, and Shabbat shalom.
What does it mean to be a Jew in the land of Israel, as a Jew in Judea? What is our message to the world? We're finally back in our land, and we get to ask these questions.
Be'ezrat Hashem, we're going to make Judea and Samaria an issue for the entire world, to know that the Jews have a place in the world.
Israel Inspired with Aria Bromwoods and Jeremy Gimpel on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.